All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. And today I have an extremely special guest. Today I want to welcome to you YouTube legend. And while he's very young, I'm going to call him a legend because he has so many followers and does so well. This, my friends, is Connor Murphy.
What's up? Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely, brother. Connor's in Thailand, so we're on different time frames. So working this out is always something, but I am extremely, extremely honored to have you on here, brother. And so let's get into it while I've got you. So let's just start off with this. You do a ton of videos, and some of them might be considered controversial, some of them highly informational. I'm curious, and I'm sure a lot of people are, what made you start doing videos, and what got you into doing the different types of videos that you do?
Yeah, so originally I started posting on YouTube in college. I was a junior in college, 21 or 22 years old. And I was majoring in a couple different majors, computational math and economics. I didn't find them too appealing. I found them quite boring. And the closer it got to me having to find a normal 9-to-5 job, the more I started imagining what my life would look like and how meaningless and boring it was going to be. And so I started searching for alternative career paths, and I experimented with fitness modeling, and I realized that was not going to be lucrative enough, and it wasn't even that fun.
No.
And so then I stumbled across the likes of Jeff Side and other fitness influencers who were making fairly entertaining content and then building a business around that content. And so I would say Jeff Side and Ziz were my main inspirations. I saw that there was certainly a demand for a specific type of content where guys would show off their physiques to girls, and the audience found that very appealing. And so I used that content for my inspiration and then threw my own twist on it and then started posting content. I developed a strategy that I figured would go viral very quickly and would be able to cultivate a business for me before I graduated college. And then I could use that as my career and my way to make money. And so that's what I did. And it was fairly successful. And so my content has evolved over time, but that's certainly what started it. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, it's highly entertaining. And, you know, we're kind of in a society today of holy rollers that get bent out of shape over nothing and never look in the mirror at themselves, you know, because they're so perfect. And what I found with your videos is not only are they extremely entertaining, but you are extremely intelligent, and people that maybe don't get past the animated videos. And when I say animated, I mean, they're just more fun, and you know what I mean? But I've found listening to you and even talking with you now that your intelligent level is far, far higher than most your age and most that I even know. And I work and talk to a lot of people. So what drove you to kind of get into the bodybuilding, the supplements, the studies that you put into that? Because it's very clear that you've done your homework. I mean, significant amounts that I'm impressed by, and I don't compliment easily. So I'm just curious of what took you down that path in terms of the studies and wanting to get into that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, I appreciate it, man. And so for those who aren't familiar with my new type of content, you know, or my original type of content was fairly superficial, you know, taking my shirt off for women. And it is important to note that that was quite the act, right? In fact, that persona, that original YouTube persona, was actually the antithesis of my normal personality. I was a very shy, introverted, nerd type character in real life. And so I developed this YouTube persona in order to facilitate a business. But also it was a cool personal development challenge because I was extremely shy and introverted, and that character forced me to get out of my comfort zone. And so that content did get fairly old fairly quickly, and we can discuss precisely why that content actually started declining, which is interesting, but it always had an expiration date. And so sure. I'm on to a more sustainable form of content, which is talking about supplementation. And the reason why I'm really passionate about it is because there's this specific conceptualization of naturalness and unnaturalness in the fitness world. And usually it's taken for granted, right? People don't critically question it. But the reality is that this dichotomous model of natural versus not isn't really congruent to reality. You'll find a lot of contradictions and limitations to this model. And a lot of people think that I'm trying to promote this spectrum model of naturalness, either to justify my unnaturalness or in an attempt to try to maintain my natty card. But this actually couldn't be further from the truth. A lot of people think it's just like a semantic argument. Oh, naturalness can be conceptualized as black and white, natural versus not, or a spectrum. It doesn't really matter. But the reality is that this conceptualization of this dichotomous conceptualization of naturalness actually exerts tangible detrimental effects in the bodybuilding world, which we can get into. But anyway, so I like talking about gray area supplements.
Yeah.
Supplements yeah. like SARMs, growth hormone secretagogues. And it's very interesting because the same criteria that are used to define natural supplements or unnatural supplements, there are natural supplements or unnatural supplements that satisfy the exact same criteria, yet are classified as the opposite. And anyway, there are all these sorts of these contradictions and these limitations of the dichotomous model. And I love talking about those. I'm really passionate about the philosophy behind the whole Natty Plus movement.
Yeah.
The idea is to dissolve these dichotomous identity labels and promote a more nuanced way of thinking. And also I'm very interested in the supplements because I believe that you can utilize certain supplements in a very healthy way. I think that the bodybuilding world is in a desperate need of balance. There's unbalanced, extreme dysfunctional behavior on both sides of the spectrum, in the unnatural world, the enhanced world, and on the natural side. I was actually a natural athlete that I, you know, looking back retrospectively, I found myself engaging in these really unbalanced extreme behaviors as a natural. I was what they would call a noble natty. And now I see the limitations of that way of thinking. And so that's why I'm passionate about it now. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Really good explanation. Now I've seen you be questioned about your natural status, and I talked to you about this before. I mean, Derek put the video out on you, and when Derek puts a video out, it obviously gets massive amounts of views and brings into a lot of question certain things because he has his way of breaking things down, and some people like it, some people don't. I don't really have an opinion either way. I mean, he's a very smart individual. We know that. And I don't think he means harm when he does these video call outs or whatever you want to call them. But what did you ever do a response back to him that broke down your view on it or what you experienced? I saw you post pictures and explain like camera angles and things like that. And I thought that was very cool that you were so honest about it and that you're open about like cameras, because everybody has this way of manipulating their photos, and light does hit you a certain way and you're pumped a certain day. And one of those pictures, you looked a lot darker than the other picture. And that obviously offsets a lot of visibility in terms of vascularity or being cut. So what resulted from all of that, and what was the main thing that you really gained from that or learned from that experience?
Yeah. So I did do an in-depth analysis scrutinizing Derek's speculation that he propagated throughout the internet, and it became quite a prevalent hypothesis, a well-accepted one, right? And so the hypothesis was that my physique deteriorated because I started to lose my hair, and so I had to stop taking anabolic steroids in order to stop my hair loss. And so there are so many things that are wrong with this narrative. It's actually quite comical. You know, my hair loss, it's completely genetic. You know, my dad was balding in his early 20s, right? And the funny thing is that the deterioration of my physique, that Derek used in this speculation was essentially a complete illusion, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he used fairly misleading photo selection and pretty intentionally, right? So the before picture that he used was a perfect photo in perfect lighting and perfect circumstances, right? And then the after photo he used that looked worse than the before photo was a screenshot taken from a video in much less flattering circumstances, right? And so I can take photos from the same time periods to mm-hmm. show a completely different story, right?
Right.
You can actually see an improvement or at least a maintenance of my physique. I mean, over this time period, I gained a little bit of muscle, maybe a tiny bit of fat too, but my physique looks no less formidable, right? So a physique can look dramatically different based on the circumstances in which you take the photo. And I actually demonstrated this very early in my career. I did a 5-minute transformation where I went from looking like someone who doesn't even lift to a NPC physique, competitor level physique in literally 5 minutes by manipulating camera lighting, angles, a tan, a pump, right? And so, you know, Derek originally propagated this narrative. He had the idea to do so because he saw comments that were saying, oh, Connor's physique is declining. You know, it's not like he came up with it. If the comments were actually saying it. And that was because I was just showing my physique in less flattering circumstances. I mean, my original videos were Omegle videos where I would perfectly set up the lighting, the camera, and the angles. I would rub oil on myself. I would make sure I was always tan. I would use self-tanner. And so my physique was always looking 100%. But then I started vlogging and naturally I also became less insecure. I was more open to showing my physique in less flattering circumstances. And so people started to see that and they started speculating, oh, his physique is deteriorating, right? When it actually just was never the case. I mean, there were points where, you know, naturally sometimes you're going to be bulking, you're holding a little less or you're holding a little more body fat, which might make your physique look less aesthetic, but I never lost any significant amount of size. And, you know, I think Derek always kind of knew that this was a possibility in the back of his mind. He seemed to have to intentionally stretch the truth to propagate his narrative in the most convincing way, because he said, oh, his physique declined so rapidly, you know, in just a couple months. Look at this dramatic physique transformation, right? Because if someone discontinued anabolic steroids, you'd expect a fairly rapid deterioration in the physique when the photos he showed were actually 2 years apart. And so even if the physique did decline in the way that he promoted, that deterioration over 2 years is actually completely possible naturally if someone just, you know, stopped working out as hard or stopped dieting as well. And so, yeah, there were all these fabrications in his story. And it's understandable, though, because people are attracted to negativity. Negativity seems to garner attention more than positivity. Right. And a physique deterioration story is certainly one that will cultivate a lot of views, and it certainly did, right? And so I understand why he said that. I'm still curious how much he actually believed his original narrative. I don't think that he believes his original narrative today, but I don't think he will ever admit it because that would cause him to lose some credibility, even though I would admire him more for admitting that he was wrong. But anyway, so yeah, that was very interesting. That certainly led to my views declining. I don't think it was entirely because of Derek's narrative, but certainly when the consensus of the internet decided that, oh, Connor Murphy's a fake natty, my content certainly lost some of the magic. Right. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey, but if it wasn't for that, it wouldn't have led me to do what I'm doing now, right? And do what I'm so passionate about now, which is questioning the natural or not dichotomy, breaking down this idea of naturalness, talking about these gray area supplements, you know? So yeah. It's not like I have any animosity towards Derek. I think that everything is positive in the long run, but it was a very interesting experience. Yeah.
I admire that more than I can say, that turning any sort of what could be considered a negative into a positive, because one thing in life, when you're able to do that, it says a lot about the person. When you don't just completely fold or give up, because a lot of people, if they were in your position, would have a meltdown, seriously, with that amount of views and seeing a decline in your views and things of that nature. So I really find that very, very, very respectable, and I admire that a lot. So I just want to say that before I move on.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Did you and him ever talk? Obviously, probably not before. But did he ever talk to you or reach out, or you reach out to him or anything of the sort, or was it just kind of the back and forth on the videos?
Yeah, I don't think we ever talked specifically about that narrative that he propagated on the internet, but later we did discuss different things in the DMs. He sent me some supplements at one point. I tried his Turkesterone and did a video on that. He showed me where to get some MK677. So we messaged via Instagram DMs, but I don't think we ever specifically discussed that original video that Derek did. Wow. But we have talked in the DMs, yeah.
Okay, cool. I don't like doing that. I've made a lot of mistakes, trust me, and I've said things that I regret and done things, but I can't wrap my head around doing videos on other people and speculating, and because it can negatively affect somebody. Not that I'm great, because I fuck up all the time, but I just don't like it. I understand it's for the views, but I guess it is what it is. I just can't stand behind that type of thing. So let me ask you this. You're obviously an Enhanced sponsored athlete, correct? And I just signed with them as well. And I did, because I have ran through the whole catalog now. And I've been in the supplement industry now over a decade. I've been doing this shit a long time. And I'm always around trick marketing and people that really don't have the best intentions. And I have ran through the catalog, and I've got to tell you, I pretty much love everything. Now, what I'm getting at is the 3AD, because one of the reasons that I started to take it was I found out that you had great experiences with it. And so I'm curious what kind of results you saw from it, and if you had any types of side effects, because I got to tell you something. I was very stressed out and lost some weight, but I put on nearly 10 pounds in the past month, and my body fat has gone down, and it's started when I was taking that in the PhytoTurk. So I'd like to know your experience with it. And it just goes to show you that there are supplements that you can take that aren't steroids. I understand it's a pro hormone, but like we were talking about earlier, I mean, the results don't lie. So what did you experience with it?
Yeah, so because I'm near or at my genetic potential for relatively natural supplement implementation, it's not like I'm going to experience any dramatic results. But when I took 3AD, especially, I tried what you could consider a megadose for experimentation. I certainly noticed some improvement. I noticed it being much easier to stay lean, or me leaning down without having to try very hard.
Right.
And my strength certainly went up in the gym. I could feel the testosterone in my system.
Yeah.
I definitely felt better, you know, more libido, more energy. And so, yeah, I like 3AD a lot. It's very interesting, and I'm interested in the structure of it and the science of it, because it is an adrenal metabolite, and it seems to be far less suppressive, if suppressive at all, because it is an adrenal metabolite.
Right.
So for those of you who don't know, testosterone is, of course, produced by the testicles, but also small amounts are produced by the adrenal glands. But the adrenal glands release their hormones in pulses, right? And so it seems like the testosterone that is secreted by the adrenal gland, if that adrenal type of testosterone, you could say, is sourced exogenously, because of the nature of the adrenal glands and the metabolism of those hormones, it seems to be far less suppressive, right? And that has been my experience. I haven't noticed any suppression at all.
Right.
In fact, I'm not, this is speculation. I'm not sure of this yet. I have to do more experimentation. But there was actually an interesting positive rebound effect that I saw when I stopped taking 3AD.
Really?
My LH and FSH actually dramatically went up when I discontinued 3AD, even though I started taking a SARM, AC262. You would wow. expect that the SARM would suppress LH or FSH, if at all, although AC262 is relatively non-suppressive.
Right.
But I started to theorize it may have been because my body started to get used to these higher levels of testosterone from the 3AD. And then when I discontinued, it attempted to regain equilibrium by boosting my LH and FSH. So it actually, like, retrospectively enhanced my natural testosterone production rather than concurrently suppressing it.
Nice.
And that might seem kind of complicated for some viewers, and I'm not positive on this, but I just can't imagine why my LH and FSH would increase after I stopped taking 3AD and then started taking a SARM.
Right.
And my testosterone, even after taking the SARM, was higher than before the 3AD. So that it just doesn't make any sense. And so if anything, the 3AD just doesn't seem to be suppressive.
No.
And so it's just so interesting to me, you know, it's like, wow, what a cheat code, you know, obviously, because one of the main things that hinder people from taking something, a certain supplement, especially a pro hormone, is that it has the potential to suppress your natural testosterone, but it just hasn't seemed to do so in my case. So it's a very intriguing supplement for me.
Yeah. And I can't say because I'm on TRT, but everything that I've studied on it and I've spent a lot of time within it, looking into it, and you brought up fabulous points about it. It should be zero suppression like you experienced, and thus makes it actually relevant to use in PCT, which I found, you know, substantial, because PCT for most people is hell on earth, especially if they don't understand how to run it properly, or a lot of people run abusive doses on cycle, which makes their PCT extremely difficult. And so it's a nice fit into PCT. And especially if with your experience, it's possibly increasing LH and FSH. Now, certain SARMs I have noticed over the years after PCT, like MK2866, for example, a lot of people will see a spike in their FSH and LH, but you just starting AC262, I wouldn't expect that. So I there's seriously a correlation there with the 3AD. I think you're absolutely right. And that's something else that I really wasn't aware of. And that's a great point. Did you notice anything else with it blood work wise? Did you see any increases in like liver values, kidney values, cholesterol, anything like that?
Yeah, no increases in liver values. I believe, I can't remember if it was AC262 or 3AD, but at one point there was an increase in my cholesterol. But the more I analyzed the blood work, I mean, I got something like 8 different blood tests over the past year. And the increases in cholesterol, although they always stayed relatively healthy within the normal range, increases and decreases of these health markers seem to be more correlated with my lifestyle and my diet and how much cardio I was doing. The supplements really didn't seem to affect it,
right,
in any way that could, yeah, in any way that could be considered definitive, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, 3AD is really interesting. That could, because I never thought that it could be used as a PCT. And while you're taking it, I don't think that it would increase LH and FSH, although in my experience, it did afterwards. But the cool thing is that you could utilize it to keep your testosterone high,
right,
while you take a supplement that reboots your natural testosterone production, or just wait for the natural testosterone production to get back going again. And so, yeah, it actually does have some application to a PCT, which is very interesting. I never would have thought that that could be the case. And so, yeah, the more I experiment with it and the more I learn about it, the more I realize, wow, yeah, what a cool designer supplement. They really designed it in a very intelligent way. So
yes.
That's very cool.
And what I like about stuff like that is it's so multifaceted. So the PCT is one option, but then as a bridge in between cycles, or even like me on TRT, and I really don't run cycles much anymore, but let's say you are blasting and cruising or whatever. It's a nice bridge. Stack it with SARMs, peptides, run it on its own with just like I am, just with my TRT dose. So when something like that has multiple uses, it's pretty desirable, especially when it's not methylated and it's not suppressing you. So that's why I wanted to talk to you about that, because I'm not a big pro hormone guy. I was obviously in like 2014 before they got banned, but then I found them rather pointless. But at this point, it's nice to have something like that that's not nearly as strong as some of those other pro hormones were in terms of side effects, like your Epistanes, your super draws, which is really considered a pro hormone at the time. Those are pretty fucking toxic, man. Like, I don't know if you probably never had experience with them or used them. I don't think, and I don't want to assume, but they're just designer steroids, but with heavier side effects than an actual steroid. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So like an Epistane, which you could say it's kind of like a Winstrol, except not quite as strong, but you'd have worse side effects. So I guess what I'm saying is the allure of the use kind of dissipated when they were made illegal, you know? So right. It's nice to have a legal supplement like this at your disposal.
Yeah, absolutely. I was fairly averse to trying pro hormones because, yeah, it just seemed like they had a lot of side effects and they didn't really appeal to me. But when I started researching 3AD, I realized that it's different. It's designed in a way that really minimizes side effects and maximizes its efficacy. So yeah, that definitely changed my mind about pro hormones. And it's very cool that it is legal. Like we sell it on the Enhanced Lab website along with whey protein powder and just your normal typical supplements. This isn't a research chemical. This is
right.
That's, yeah, like FDA compliant. It's very interesting. So yeah, it's very cool.
So I want to get into talk to you about SARMs, but before we go to SARMs, I'm curious, are there any other just like basic natural supplements? I mean, I take a lot of herbs and things like that, but in terms of supplements, is there anything that you found that works quite well and that you kind of maybe have like a staple product or something that you use? Because a lot of natural or people that want to stay natural, I don't think they're aware of a lot of things or know what really works. They're kind of just like pro creatine, pro betaine. They don't really know. So what else for you have you enjoyed or that you kind of continue to use?
Yeah. So supplements relatively low on the natural or not spectrum. So relatively natural supplements, obviously things like creatine, people consider that natural. Turkesterone.
Yeah.
I do like turkesterone, even something like epicatechin, which is sold by Enhanced Labs as Epimuscle, it's called, which isn't super potent, but it can't hurt. You know, anytime you have a natural supplement that has any sort of advantage at all with absolutely zero side effects, it's like, why am I not taking it?
Yep.
Right. So I like those two. You know, you have some different fat burning supplements to shed body fat, like alpha yohimbine,
yep,
which seems to have less side effects than regular yohimbine.
Yep.
So I appreciate that as well. Obviously just typical whey protein powder. And then, you know, testosterone boosters, you have Blue and Black Ox, which incorporate a lot of relatively natural compounds. Black Ox contains compounds, which DHEA is a gray area compound, right? But most of the compounds in Blue and Black Ox testosterone booster would be considered natural by the consensus. And so, yeah, I do incorporate a lot of relatively natural supplements as well. And although they're not as potent as the more unnatural supplements, when you stack a lot of these natural supplements together, even if they only give you a 1% boost, you know, you stack 10 of these different supplements, you're getting a 10% boost. That's very significant.
Right.
And a lot of these tend to be synergistic. So you stack 10, it's not even a 10%. It's 15% boost, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, they can be very beneficial as well.
I agree. The turkesterone will surprise people. I think there was, I don't want to be harsh, but I think there was misrepresentation on it early on about it like being like a steroid. It's certainly not. But I think that people would be shocked, I think more so with the strength than the size that you get from it. But the strength is caught me off guard a little bit. It was more than I expected. I wouldn't expect a ton of size personally on it, but did you feel pretty strong on it when you took it?
Yeah, I did. I did notice my lifts go up. It was quite analogous to something like creatine. You know, as soon as you become fully saturated with creatine, your lifts are going to go up by 15% or whatnot. And I noticed something similar with turkesterone. And so, of course, that's not going to directly lead to size. But
right.
if you utilize that strength gain to your advantage and progressive overload with your lifts, obviously that's going to facilitate some size as well. And so, yeah, again, it's like turkesterone, the side effects are essentially negligible.
Right.
And it provides some benefit. So yeah, why not yeah. take it, right? That's the appeal to it. It's not some magic pill, but anytime you can take a supplement with negligible side effects that has some sort of positive impact, I'm all about it, you know?
Hell yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that. So let's talk SARM. So I'm going to give you a little bit of my background first, and then I'm very curious as to some of your experiences. So I kind of was one of the first people talking about SARMs on YouTube. I started in 2012, and that was when I ran my first cycle. And so at the time, all you could buy was MK2866, S4, and then there were just a very few sites that sold MK677. And I'm not shitting you, man. It was like $250, $300 a bottle. And like raw materials for MK677 back then were insane. And I had found that out later on because I didn't understand the cost. So my first cycle was just Osterin and Andorin, period. And honestly, to this day, and I've ran nearly everything, that was the best experience. Now, granted, it was my first time using them, so that probably had something to do with it. But what I'm curious to you is, what was your first SARM cycle, and have you used them all? And if you haven't, what is your favorite so far? And then, sorry to make this a long part question, but beyond that, if you haven't used them all, what are you looking forward to using?
Yeah, so actually the first SARM that I ever tried was Osterin. So back in 2017, I got a hair transplant and I decided to hop on finasteride. And I was aware that there could be some potentially negative side effects. And so to counterbalance that, I thought, okay, I'll try some Osterin.
Right.
Right. And I ended up experiencing some fairly severe side effects. And it was probably more because of the finasteride, but I actually started experiencing a little bit of gyno, severely decreased libido. And so I discontinued all of that within a few weeks, right? So I wouldn't even really consider that initial Osterin cycle like a real full cycle, you know? But after that, I experimented with MK677 and I had very positive results. And then recently, over this past year, I experimented with AC262. And so my philosophy is that I want to only utilize the least suppressive SARMs, right? Part of the whole Natty Plus philosophy is that in order to mitigate drug abuse, right, we want to only incorporate specific supplements that you don't rely on, right? So that's one of the disadvantages of something like exogenous testosterone is obviously if you stop taking it, you're going to experience terrible side effects. You're going to feel awful, and that incentivizes you to keep taking it or take more, right? So the idea with any Natty Plus supplements, the idea is if you stop taking them, then you essentially revert to baseline or stay above baseline. So you don't build a reliance. You don't have to rely on these supplements. You don't get addicted to them.
Right.
And yeah, ideally you would incorporate supplements that act as some sort of PCT, but the idea is that you don't necessarily have to. Any cycle that I've ran, if I stop, I essentially revert to baseline. There aren't severe enough side effects to make me feel like I'm addicted to that supplement. So in terms of SARMs, there are some SARMs that seem to be fairly suppressive that people have taken, and they've elicited some pretty severe side effects once they stop. And so I like to be selective
right.
of my SARMs, right? And so AC262 is essentially the only one that I really utilize. I want to experiment with more, like what ACP.
Yeah.
ACP 105. That yep. one seems ACP 105. That one seems to elicit minimal side effects as well. But those are the SARMs that I'm really interested in, is those SARMs that seem to be minimally suppressive and have very low side effects, because I think that those align with the Natty Plus philosophy the most.
Right.
So So yeah, the only real SARM cycles that I've completed are AC262 cycles, but I plan to experiment with more minimally suppressive and SARMs with minimal side effects in the future.
Yeah, so obviously you're going to avoid like an S23, an LGD3303, YK11. Those are on the higher suppressive side. My thinking or recommendation, and obviously it depends on whatever goals that you have. S4 has always been one of my favorites. Now, obviously, there's the possibility of the vision side effects, which I'm sure you're aware of. But suppressive-wise and overall side effect-wise, it's going to be on the lower side for you. And that's one I would look at. ACP-105 is similar to S4 and how it acts. The concern there is the headaches that you can get. Not everybody gets them, but that's another one that would probably fall in line with you. Then I don't know, and I wanted to get into your training, but so I'm a 10-mile-a-day runner. So GW 501-516 is like my favorite. It always has been. But it's not for everybody. And SR9009 and those both being non-suppressive might be something that you'd want to look at too. I think you'd like them both a lot, honestly. And I call GW the ultimate performance enhancer because it's not going to on the surface give you any size at all. But because it allows you to do so much and so much output, if you're taking that with anything, it's going to like, I call it the enhancement for your enhancer because it takes you to another level of your training. So that's another one that you may want to, you know, look at later on down the road when you, anything that you run it with, honestly.
Yeah, I think GW is something I really need to try because I get so many questions about it. And I actually haven't experimented with any of those endurance boosting research chemicals yet. So I think that that's something that I need to do at least for a little bit. That's very interesting about S4. Yeah, I didn't know that it had that level of suppression. So maybe it's something that I should try. So yeah, I definitely want to experiment with different compounds like that in the future. So yeah, especially just so I have experience so I can give advice to people, you know?
Yeah.
And all the experiments always make for great content. So yeah, I should definitely experiment with that in the future.
So S4, if you were going to take S4 and pick out a steroid it's similar to, you would be looking at like an Anavar or Winstrol. And it's going to make you very nice muscle hardening. It made me extremely vascular, and I'm a leaner guy on the surface, but it really popped veins a lot. But here's the thing that's impressive about it the most is the strength. I'll put it up against almost any SARM in terms of strength. Now, S23 and 3303, those are more like steroids, so I can't put it on that level, but I'd put it up against damn near any other SARM for strength. So just something to keep in mind on what you could get from it. Not everybody gets the vision side effects, and it's very subjective to the person because there's no way to predict that. But aside from that, I mean, it's even got benefits for your prostate, which is rather shocking. I mean, you know, considering, but suppression is generally pretty similar to like an MK2866, maybe like an AC262. So it'd be on the smaller end for you. Let me ask you this. Have you ever considered peptide use, or have you even thought about it or looked into them at all?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, peptides, it's such an umbrella term that incorporates so many different compounds. Some would be considered unnatural. Some would be considered relatively natural. So I'm probably forgetting some of the ones that I've taken, but the first one that comes to mind is BPC-157, which seems to have just a myriad of benefits. Primarily, it's used as a healing compound, but studies even show that it improves cognitive function. It seems to be extremely beneficial, and so I've definitely taken that. What other peptides have I taken? If you start naming some, because I probably am not aware at the moment of certain things that are peptides that I have taken.
So some of the more popular ones would be like TB500 stacks well with BPC-157, but then like your ipamorelin, your CJC-1295, your IGF, semorelin, hexorelin, GHRPs, melanotan-2. These are all the more popular compounds that people use. PT-141, that's like a you know, libido enhancement. I guess for you, in terms of like training and everything, I think like an Ipamorelin or a CJC 1295, you'd probably really love those. Melanotan too would be huge for libido and like your tanning. I couldn't do the side effects with it myself. I got so fucking nauseous, I couldn't take it. And some people do and some people don't, you know, but I think you'd love some of those.
CJC and Ipamorelin, those are growth hormone secretagogues, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I take MK677. I was on MK677 most of the year. I did 2 days on, 1 day off, so I could take it more long term. And so it would be interesting to try those and see how they compare. I haven't tried those yet, but I have tried PT141 and Melanotan. Yeah,
yeah.
Those are the ones that I was forgetting. And so, yeah, I experienced the nausea side effects as well with Melanotan and PT141. So I've really only been able to take small dosages. I have noticed the Melanotan did significantly darken the skin color. The PT141 and the Melanotan, did they enhance libido? Yeah, a little bit. I feel like I didn't get to experience the full effects because I couldn't take the full dosage because of the nausea.
Right.
So, and they also kind of make me tired. So I do have some, I did experience some adverse side effects that makes me resistant to really try the full dosage of them. But yeah, they certainly can be quite beneficial in terms of libido, especially. And of course, if you want to make your skin darker as well.
Yeah. So I lived in Maui when I took Melanotan too. And I didn't realize at the time because, I mean, peptides were kind of newer to the scene at that time. We're talking 2011, 2012. Brother, I was so embarrassed that I got so dark. I had to stay home for a few days and not really go anywhere. It was so embarrassing. And like the nausea, because you should try to take it at night for most people to get through the nausea and the tiredness like you're talking about, because it's brutal. For me, and you know, you kind of start low and move your way up. I couldn't do it, man. I was throwing up within like 2 minutes of injecting it every single time, even after 3 weeks. So I just gave up.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. You know, the Melanotan, it's pretty interesting. I actually didn't take it for vanity purposes. So melanin in the skin actually modifies the skin's immune function. And so originally, I started taking Melanotan to actually attempt to heal a skin condition.
Oh. A
specific skin condition on my lower body that's fairly chronic and I've struggled with since I was like 15 years old. So there's a lot of different things that I do to experiment to try and mitigate the effects of that condition. And Melanotan was one of them. And I think it did help to an extent. I wouldn't consider it a cure or anything like that. But yeah, that's why it is. So, obviously there's a balance. You don't want to just scorch your skin with the sun, because obviously over time that could lead to skin cancer. But there is a healthy balance. I think actually the majority of people probably aren't getting enough sun
right. In
modern society, right? That's why I promote, obviously, supplementing with vitamin D. But yeah, it's good to be exposed to the sun. And Melanotan is cool because you can get that benefit of that melanin in the skin, which modulates the skin's immune function, keeps the skin healthy while minimizing your sun exposure. So there's definitely some potential for some positive health benefits from the Melanotan. And that's actually why I was so interested in it. And so, yeah, very interesting compound. I wish it didn't have the side effects of the tiredness and the nausea, but you know, everyone responds to these supplements differently. Exactly. And if you don't experience those, well then yeah, great. Yeah. Some people don't. So
very intriguing. I'm glad that I heard that from you, because I've never heard anybody use it for that purpose. That's pretty interesting, man. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So when you ran, MK677 and AC262, how did you, cause you know, MK677 has gotten extremely, extremely popular over the years. And I knew like around 2015, 16, I used to tell people this is going to take off into another realm. It was already kind of popular, but it was still getting there. I mean, it's the closest thing to regular HGH you can actually get. And people that don't want to spend that money or inject all the time or get the side effects, I mean, this is your next best option. How did you feel on it? Like, especially at the beginning, because a lot of people get super, super hungry and a lot of people will hold water. Did you experience either of those, and how long did you take it, and what did you kind of experience? Cause it kind of works over time. So what was your experience like with it?
Yeah, so the first time I took it was a few years ago. And so, I mean, I could more easily touch on the previous use that I did, which was the entirety of this year, essentially 2 days on, 1 day off. I did more rigorous blood work. Actually, I don't think I did any blood work at all the first time that I took it. But over this past year, we did scrupulous blood work. I mean, every month or so.
Nice.
And so, yeah, it's actually tough to determine precisely how much MK677 boosts your GH on average. I mean, you can look at the studies, the scientific literature, but in terms of your own self-experimentation, because growth hormone is released in pulses, it's tough to determine, did this blood test, did I catch it on a peak or on a valley, right? Because from one test to the next, my growth hormone increased by something like 1,800%.
Wow.
Which is just extremely dramatic. And, you know, I don't believe that on average, my growth hormone increased by that much. You know, we probably caught growth hormone at its peak on the second test. But still, I mean, to see growth hormone increase from 1,800% from one test to the other, it's just like, wow, this thing is absolutely working. And yeah, you can feel it working. I did get more hungry. And because I was incorporating other supplements as well, my metabolism was optimized, and that was a positive for me. Like a lot of people, if they're cutting or they already have a high appetite or they need to eat low calorie in order to maintain their current levels of body fat, maybe that's a disadvantage, right? And maybe you need to incorporate some appetite suppressants along with it. But for me, it was only a positive. And so, yeah, MK677, any negative side effects? I think the only negative side effect that I experienced was at 20 milligrams per day over a long enough time, I did start noticing some slight brain fog. And again, everyone responds to it differently. And I tend to be more aware because, I mean, this is my job, is experimenting with these supplements and being aware of the side effects. So some people, if they experience the same level of brain fog, they may not have even noticed, right? But as soon as I decreased it to 10 to 15 milligrams per day, that effect completely subsided, right? So that's the sweet spot for me for MK677 is 10 to 15 milligrams per day. And the other most common side effect that's concerning is the insulin resistance that can be developed from MK677.
Exactly.
But what I found through experimentation with myself and also other people who have done this experiment, if you take Slim pills alongside it, which Slim pills are designed to increase insulin sensitivity, there seems to only be a net positive change in your insulin response. So a good proxy for this is HbA1c, which is your average blood sugar, right? And I incorporated MK677 and Slim pills simultaneously, and my HbA1c actually improved.
Nice.
And this seems to be fairly typical. I've had followers who have done the same protocol and they experienced similar results. Their HbA1c actually improved. And so you take MK677 and Slim pills together, and it seems to only enhance your insulin sensitivity. So the Slim pills seem to be stronger than the MK677 in terms of modulating the insulin response. And so, yeah, so you take Slim pills, and the only other side effects you really have to worry about are the ones that are relatively subjective. You know, the hunger, which could be positive or negative, the sleep, some people sleep better on it, some people sleep a little worse. But yeah, so it seems that's the appeal of it. You know, it boosts your natural growth hormone production. It's not really suppressive in any way. I mean, it's possible that it increases prolactin a little bit. For me, it increased it very marginally. I mean, I did have one follower, though. He had a very sensitive response to the prolactin increase. And if that's the case, I mean, you could take other supplements to mitigate the prolactin increase, like cabergoline or pramipexole, dopamine agonists that decrease prolactin. But, or, you know, if you have that sensitive of a response to it, maybe MK677 just isn't the supplement for you, but it's relatively rare. So there are these, you know, there are these certain cases where it you might have a adverse reaction to it. But overall, I mean, overall, it's just an overwhelmingly positive supplement, it seems.
Yeah. Speaking of, I love these, dude. I got them sitting right here. I started taking these, and not to get off topic, but I don't eat a ton of carbs, but at night I eat it like a double portion of oatmeal. It's like one of my biggest meals of the day because I don't eat a ton. And I swear to you, as soon as I start fucking taking these, I wake up in the morning and I'm like extremely dry. And like, you can really tell, I know the difference and I don't overhype shit, you know, at all. This shit works like in a major way. It really does. And it caught me off guard because I figured by the ingredient makeup, it would be solid, but you ain't lying, man. That's probably my favorite one because I'm real big. I'm like as obsessive over the body and like I know what I'm holding, like an ounce of water or anything, like literally. So that helped my mental stability a little bit too, to be honest with you. But it definitely does work in a major way.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I will not eat a cheat meal without the Slim Pills ever again. You know, a lot of people, especially if they're somewhat insulin resistant already, you know, they'll notice they eat a huge meal composed of a lot of carbs and they feel very tired and lethargic afterwards. Well, you take the Slim Pills beforehand and you don't really experience those effects because they lower the blood sugar response, right? And they are extremely powerful,
yes,
right? They are definitely an underrated supplement. And because the supplements that are incorporated into the Slim Pills are relatively natural, it just kind of goes under the radar. Its potency kind of goes under the radar. I mean, I had a follower who was taking 8 Slim Pills per day, and it actually lowered his blood sugar too much to the point where he was feeling a little bit dizzy and tired.
Wow.
You know, and because he was taking MK677 and Slim Pills, and he's like, why am I feeling dizzy and tired after lunchtime? You know, because, you know, blood sugar is a concern when you're taking MK677, but he was only taking MK677 for a few days and he was taking 8 Slim Pills per day. So I was like, okay, the chance of him developing insulin resistance with that protocol is absolutely zero. So it actually might be because he's taking too many Slim Pills and acutely lowering his blood sugar by too much, which is wild that they're that powerful. So yeah, you actually have to be fairly careful because they are that powerful. They do their job.
Absolutely.
You know? But of course, blood sugar can be lowered acutely by too much, right? So be careful and make sure you start out small, but that just goes to show how powerful they actually are.
100%. So one thing I will tell you, because you're 29, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so MK677 will work great for you in your 20s, but as you get into your 30s and your HGH levels start to naturally decline, you'll notice a lot more from it. And that's one of the big things about it that you have to look forward to down the road as well. So how long did you run it each time that you ran it?
Yeah. So the first time I ran it, I think I did cycles of 2 months. I probably did 2 different cycles of 2 months and I probably took 2 months off or something like that. And then recently this year, for the sake of experimentation, I took it every day. And then I attempted to mitigate the side effects of, you know, like the water retention and the slight brain fog that I had. So I decreased it to 10 to 15 milligrams per day, and I took it 2 days on, 1 day off. And because of those small intermittent breaks, I was able to run it a lot longer, right? And so I ran it the majority of this year. I'm now taking a break. And so I think it's still good to come off of it every once in a while. So maybe I'll start it up again next year. But essentially, I ran it the majority of the year. I mean,
yeah,
8-9 months or something like that, 2 days on, 1 day off. And at 10 to 50 milligrams per day, 2 days on, 1 day off, I experienced absolutely zero negative side effects. And so, yeah, it was a very positive experience.
So there's studies that go back actually to the 90s for MK2866 and 677. And you've probably seen it, but if you haven't, and this is for the audience, the studies showed it like at 6 months and a year and the drastic increases in the IGF levels and the tolerance of people. And it was extremely well tolerated and it worked extremely well for you. The year at a time showed the most drastic increase in the IGF levels. One thing I'll point out for the next time that you use it and with the water retention, one way to mitigate that to an extent is the sodium potassium ratio. And a lot of people don't get anywhere near the right amount of potassium, but a lot of people eat a lot of fucking sodium. And right, you should not exceed 2300 milligrams of sodium, and you should be getting 4700 milligrams of potassium, especially when you're using 677. It's not going to eradicate the water retention, but it will mitigate it. But potassium intake is nowhere near that for a lot of people. And it's hard to get that many milligrams in a day. And sometimes you need like electrolyte drinks and supplementation for that because enough food. But just so you know, and the audience knows, that's one way to potentially lower it, you know, to an extent. It's worked for a lot of people. And
yeah, interesting. I should definitely
do yes, that. And HGH too, same kind of thing. So, what about AC262? Because that's newer and it doesn't have as much experience or as many logs out there or user feedback. What did you feel on that? Did you stay dry? Was it similar to MK2866? Those are kind of the things that get tossed around there.
So yeah, what I really noticed for me, it seems to be magnificent for cutting specifically. I mean, again, I'm near my genetic potential for these relatively natural approaches, right? So it's not like I'm going to experience a significant amount of new muscle growth, especially just in the 1 month experiments that I'm doing, right? But these experiments are long enough to where I can see its potential. And so during these experiments, I did notice a significant hardening of the muscles, drying of the muscles, and I found it extremely easy to just shed body fat without trying. Nice. And so I got significantly harder, significantly leaner, and my physique looked significantly better after a month. The longest I ever ran it was 2 months. And so that was the main difference that I noticed. And yeah, so I have had very positive experiences, and AC2 is really appealing to me because there was absolutely no definitive conclusive testosterone suppression. You know, it's tough to really pinpoint the testosterone suppression because obviously testosterone fluctuates significantly based on so many different factors. Literally, if you see an attractive girl walking down the street before you take the testosterone test, it can actually significantly alter your results. You know,
yes.
If you get a bad night's sleep the night before, it can significantly alter your results. I mean, sleep deprivation causes like a 24% decrease in testosterone, you know, and same with LH and FSH. And also these hormones naturally fluctuate throughout the day. Testosterone, especially in young men, tends to be highest in the morning and then dip throughout the day. And so if you take the test 2 hours later in the day, your testosterone is going to be noticeably lower. And so it's tough, but from my best analysis of these blood work results over time, if there was any suppression, it seemed to be extremely minimal and it bounced back extremely quickly. And AC262 is also, there's been no evidence that it negatively impacts liver values. If it does at all, it's very minimal and it seems to impact liver values far less than the other SARMs.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's why it's very appealing to me. And I've had very positive results with it. I think that it's a very balanced supplement that can be incorporated into a balanced routine that people should be utilizing, right? Yeah, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I talked to Tony about it because I hadn't used it and he spoke glowingly about it just like you are. So, I mean, and I've seen a few other people kind of have similar experiences with it. How about the strength on it? Did you feel a pretty good increase in that as well?
Yeah, just a little bit. I definitely, there was a noticeable strength increase. It wasn't anything crazy. And again, I don't really lift for strength. I lift more for hypertrophy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really too concerned about strength. You know, in my day-to-day life, I don't really need to use superhuman levels of strength. You know, I'm more concerned just about maintaining the aesthetic of my physique.
Yeah.
But I did notice a significant, nothing magical, but a significant strength increase. You know, I was able to get a couple more reps than I normally would.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely improved strength as well.
Do you remember,
But
do you remember what milligram dose you ran it at?
So I ran it at a few different milligram dosages. So initially it was 10 milligrams. I did 10, 20, and 30 milligrams. Okay. So I would say standard for me would be like a 20 milligram cycle. That was the most recent cycle that I did, was a 2 month cycle at 20 milligrams. I really did 30 milligrams just for the sake of experimentation. And oh, the other, okay. So at 30 milligrams, I did notice a slight amount of irritability.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So I noticed just little things. They made me just a little more annoyed. And this may be positive or negative depending on your goals and your personality. Like it could give you that extra edge that you need. You know, it could be motivating in a sense. For me, I mean, it was a personal development challenge. Like, can I remain calm despite my increased emotional volatility? You know, it's so it's like, it just depends on your perspective, but that could be perceived as a negative. I would say that if I had to choose, for in general, I wouldn't like to have that side effect, but at 20 milligrams and 10 milligrams, I didn't really experience that.
Yeah. So that's good to know, because I have always recommended to people to start at 10 milligrams and then after 2 to 3 weeks, assess it and maybe bump it up to 20. So it's good to know about the 30 that you could see a little bit of aggression or irritability or anything like that, because there's always a certain point where you don't want to go too high. Because more is not always better. Right. And so, yeah, that's good to know. I want to run back real quick on your 3AD dose. What were you dosing on that?
Okay, let's see. So two pills are 75 milligrams.
Yes.
So the first experiment that I ran was just two pills per day. And then the highest dosage experiment that I ran was two pills three times per day.
Got it.
So, yeah. And so, yeah, it was interesting. It was I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was the high dose 3AD experiment that was followed by the high dose AC262 experiment. And that was the really intriguing circumstance where I discontinued the 3AD and then started the AC262, but the LH and FSH shot up.
Wow.
After I got the blood test done after taking the AC262.
Wow.
So even though it was the highest dosage of AC262 that I took, the 30 milligrams daily, my LH and FSH still were dramatically boosted. And so that was just really, really interesting to me. And again, hormones fluctuate, right?
Sure.
But it was a significant change. It was significantly different than any other blood test that I've gotten. So it's just very, very interesting. You know, it's like, wow, a super high dose of 3AD and a super high dose of AC262 left my FH and FSH the highest that it's ever been.
That's crazy, so, man.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
That's cool. I was doing 150 milligrams is what I've been doing the whole time from the start. So I may rack it up now. Like, if you had a good experience with it, I may try it up there to another 75 milligrams added on. Did you find that to be the best experience for you with it?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely, that's where I really saw the significant increase in testosterone.
Okay.
Right.
Cool.
And yeah, I didn't really notice any negative side effects whatsoever. I just noticed, yeah, a significant boost in my testosterone, probably by, oh, what was it? Somewhere between 1 and 200 nanograms per deciliter increase.
You That's know? Pretty good.
Nothing crazy. But again, I didn't really experience any side effects, so it's possible that I could have upped the dosage a little more. It would be interesting to see how far I could push it. But, you know, It was adequate. I got the boost that I was looking for. And so it certainly did its job. So yeah, positive experience.
Nice. So what's your future plans? Are you going to try to stick with the more natural concept for a lot longer time period? Do you have any aspirations to kick it up to like tests or any other anabolics, or what's your mindset at right now?
Yeah, I don't really have any aspirations to go above and beyond what I'm doing right now. I mean, I want to experiment with different gray area Natty Plus supplements, we would call them, but because, you know, I'm content with my physique. In fact, I would be content being a lot smaller as well. I just think that the bodybuilding world is in desperate need of a balance right now. And so that's why I want to do these experiments and promote that balance. So I think I will stick with the balanced supplementation. And you know, we already have a lot of people promoting TRT. TRT can be very beneficial for the vast majority of the people. But for me, I do want to promote the ways to boost your natural testosterone, absolutely, right? And keep your natural testosterone functioning. So I think that I'll stick with that. Currently, I'm experimenting with enclomiphene, which is a natural testosterone booster. It essentially tricks your brain into thinking that you have low estrogen. So it compensates by releasing more gonadotropin releasing hormone and then downstream LH, FSH, and then testosterone.
Yes.
Right. And so I haven't got my blood test yet. I've been on it a few weeks, but I'll get my blood test soon, but it does seem to be working fairly well. So I'm off of most of the supplements. I'm off of the blue and black ox testosterone boosters, the MK677. I'm trying to run enclomiphene mostly in isolation so I can have a good blood test with the fewest number of variables as possible. But I do believe, I mean, just based on how I'm feeling, I do believe that it significantly increased my testosterone. We'll see by the blood test, but the balls definitely feel bigger. You know, the libido is increased, the energy is increased, and I haven't really noticed any negative side effects at all. And so I actually experimented. I haven't really talked about this on the Natty Plus channel because it was such a short experiment, but I experimented with clomiphene a couple months ago, but I quit after 5 days or something because of the emotional side effects. I didn't feel great. You know, it wasn't anything crazy, but I'm very aware of how supplements affect me, you know, and as soon as I feel something that, you know, it causes brain fog or causes me to feel a little bit depressed, I'm like, okay, it's not really worth taking it. I mean, that's part of the Natty Plus philosophy, is that I want to be able to take these supplements with essentially zero side effects, or the side effects being negligible, right? And if that's not the case, my philosophy is, okay, I'm either not going to take that supplement or I'm going to decrease the dosage until I don't experience side effects, right? And so, yeah, clomiphene, I experienced some negative side effects, but enclomiphene, I haven't experienced any negative side effects whatsoever. Now, will I in the future? I don't know. I guess we'll see. Enclomiphene is so interesting because some people are taking it indefinitely successfully as well. So they've done studies on clomiphene, like long-term studies, 3 years or something like that. And it does seem to maintain testosterone levels for years on end. So it doesn't really seem like something you build a tolerance to. I mean, we can extrapolate that and clomiphene does the same thing. Really, the only difference is the estrogen is going to be increased on clomiphene. It's going to be lower on enclomiphene, and you're going to have less of the side effects on enclomiphene. But you could speculate that, I mean, the dosages aren't exactly equal, but the same magnitude of dosage, or the same dosage that elicits the same effects on enclomiphene, is going to produce less side effects than clomiphene. But anyway, I think that enclomiphene is very intriguing to me, and I'm going to run it as long as I can and see if I run into any side effects. If I do, then I'll probably cycle it. I think it's great. It's cool because we have blue and black ox. Could totally alternate those two things. Yes. And come off of the enclomiphene, but you keep your testosterone high with the blue and black ox. But also, I want to experiment using blue and black ox alongside enclomiphene, because there could be some synergy there. Because one concern, and usually this is a concern more with clomiphene, but some people do report that their SHBG is a little bit increased on enclomiphene. And studies do show that it does increase SHBG a little bit. And for those of you who don't know, SHBG binds to testosterone, rendering it bio unavailable, right? So it decreases your free testosterone. But some people report like dramatic side effects where the libido is absolutely crushed. And I haven't seen studies indicate that this could really be a possibility with enclomiphene, although again, there's so much individual variability. I don't doubt it. Like, I'm sure it probably has happened to some people, but also, you know, it's very possible that people are getting fake enclomiphene that's actually just clomiphene from the source. Absolutely. That they order it from.
Yes.
Because clomiphene is much cheaper to produce, right? You'll notice on Swiss Chems that enclomiphene is more expensive because it's more difficult to obtain, but it's worth it because of the reduced chances of side effects, right? And so it's very possible that all these people, maybe not all of them, but at least some of them that are experiencing these negative side effects on enclomiphene, they might actually just be taking clomiphene unknowingly.
True.
So anyway, yeah, very intriguing supplement. I definitely want to do more experiments with it in the future and continue to take it and see how I respond.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm very intrigued by when you do the blood work to see the comparison and contrast of what it was pre to post. That'll be a good one. So definitely let me know when you do that, because I want to see it, because I'll be intrigued by that. I like how you brought up the Clomid side effects. Now, curious to me, what did you start dosing the Clomid at when you were using it?
Oh, I'm not sure if I remember. It must have been, I don't think I split up the pill. So I think that Swiss Chems sells Clomid in 25 milligram pills.
Probably 25 or 50, I would imagine.
Right. So I think I was taking 25 per day, but I'll look it up real quick. But yeah, let's assume I was taking 25 milligrams per day.
Yeah, because generally one of the things that I run it, they're 25 milligrams a capsule. I just popped it up.
Okay.
So, yeah, because a lot of people misuse Clomid. A lot of people believe that you have to use 200 milligrams, 100 milligrams, and that's when you start to see the emotional side effects. Normally under 50, it's not nearly as bad, but if you see that with it, it's definitely like stop. Just stop, because it's just not worth it. And then a lot of people will get like these floaties in their eyes and their vision with Clomid. And, you know, when you start taking Clomid and Novadex long-term, I mean, in reality, Novadex is meant to treat breast cancer and Clomid is for fertility. So I guess I always tell people use it the least amount possible, and Clomiphene's much different and it's very intriguing. So that's why I'm curious as to your results on it. But, you know, for me, and I don't know how it is for you, but anything that can mess with me emotionally, and that's why when my experiences with Tren was one of the only things, because I'm a guy, and it sounds like you are too, that we're very in control of our emotions. And if something takes you off of that, it's like a huge red flag, you know, and you just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely not willing to sacrifice my emotional state or my cognitive functioning or how I just, if I just don't feel good taking supplements, I'm just not going to take them, or I'm going to take a lower dosage. So yeah, and Clomiphene, I'm only taking 6.25 milligrams per day. It's a really low dosage. And I believe that if you are going to attempt to take it long term, then of course it's much better to try to take a low dose long term. So from my research, it just seems that everyone who experiences negative side effects on it in Clomiphene, they're taking too much for their specific physiology. And when they do decrease that in Clomiphene, the side effects do dissipate. And so there almost certainly exists a dosage of enclomiphene that everyone could take that provides them a benefit with negligible side effects, even if that's 3 milligrams per day.
Yeah. Right?
Some people, I have seen some people just taking 3 milligrams per day and they do notice a significant testosterone increase, maybe not as much as taking 12 milligrams per day or something like that, but a significant testosterone increase, negligible side effects. So of course, yeah, why not take it?
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things for me that I always ask people and I never understand, when you take anything, whether it's a steroid, a SARM, a peptide, the whole goal here is you're supposed to feel good while you do it. You're not supposed to feel like shit. And it takes away, you know, I see these guys run these massive cycles and have all these side effects. And it's like, you can't even really go to the gym and perform when that happens. So like, for instance, one of my worst experiences, I took Superdrol and I didn't even want to get out of bed, dude. Like getting up to go to the gym was like brutal. Now, when I was in there, you were an animal, but it's like, if you feel that shitty, I say, just forget it. Don't even bother. Cause there's plenty of things you can feel good on, make good results and not harm yourself or have horrible experiences throughout. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's your feeling on that?
It's like this whole, I mean, this whole fitness endeavor, I mean, people forget the purpose of this fitness endeavor in the first place. It's to enhance your life, right? And so you should find a way to implement fitness within your lifestyle that harmonizes with your lifestyle. You know, you shouldn't really have to sacrifice certain aspects of your life. I mean, yeah, of course you need to make some time sacrifice to go to the gym and whatnot, but you shouldn't have to be making these major sacrifices just to achieve the physique that you want. It should, the vast majority of this experience should be positive. Obviously, you know, you have to go through some discomfort in the gym. It's not like going to the gym is always fun, but fitness should harmonize with the rest of your life. And that's the issue that I have with bodybuilding, especially professional bodybuilding and serious bodybuilding, is that it just absolutely destroys the rest of your life. And that's just not how I want my relationship with fitness to be, you know? And it was a little dysfunctional in the past, because in order to obtain this physique competitor level physique, I had to engage in these obsessive compulsive behaviors, just meticulously counting calories, you know, sacrificing my social life. I would get extremely upset if I had to miss a workout, and my life was really just missing that balance, which wasn't great for my physical or mental health. Yep. You know, I mean, you have these noble natties today that you know, they're dieting down for these natural competitions, and they're having to absolutely crush their natural testosterone levels to essentially hypogonadal levels of testosterone, approaching like female levels of testosterone. I've seen guys who diet down for competitions and their testosterone is literally like 100 nanograms per deciliter.
No.
And it just seems wild to me. It's like one of the reasons that these guys don't, you know, go the enhanced route is because they want to maintain their natural testosterone production. They don't want to suppress it. And then they're dieting down for these shows and severely suppressing their testosterone, you know, lower than they would suppress it if they would have taken something like a SARM. Now, you know, dieting down for a show, maybe your testosterone level bounces back quicker after you stop than it would if you, you know, were on TRT for a few years, right? But still, it's just, I see so much incongruities with the mindsets of these noble natties. You know, to me, life is all about balance. Every aspect of life is. And I think that your supplementation approach and your fitness approach should be about balance as well.
I agree. You know, it's funny because I always tell people some of the times if I show you the pictures where I looked my best, I felt my worst. Like literally, yeah. It's just dog shit. And you look at a picture and you see somebody and you're like, holy shit, they're fucking jacked, they're fucking ripped. But people don't realize like what goes into that and how it makes you feel. And I'm an obsessive, I did fashion modeling in my early 20s, and I've always been like super hard on myself and looked at myself in a negative way. And I've struggled with that my whole life. And I'm finally, now I'm 41 and I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. It's miserable and it's not a good way to live. So when you talk about balance, and you can't have health and longevity without mental stability too, right? And so there's a fine line, and it's great to take this serious and to be consistent and disciplined, but it's a whole nother level to be obsessive. And when you cross that line and you start messing up here, it throws everything off in your life, and it's honestly not worth it. And look, I'm the biggest promoter of staying in good shape and looking good, feeling good and everything. But I've started to more speak out now on obsessive traits like that I had. You know, a lot of times I tell people the best teachers made the most mistakes. And I think that it's important when you make mistakes or you find experiences with others that you convey it so people don't make those mistakes and you don't have a problem admitting it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, people just don't seem to acknowledge the interconnectedness between physical and mental health. If you're obsessing over your fitness routine, you're extremely stressed out about it. You know, you have to hit that anabolic window and get that protein after your meal. You know, you have to hit your precise amount of calories. And, you know, if you go out to eat, you're extremely stressed out because you're going to disrupt your balance of macros, you know. It's like that's going to be eliciting an amount of stress that is going to significantly increase your cortisol. And of course, cortisol is going to lead to increased body fat percentage. It's going to lead to decreased testosterone. Right. And so it's this obsessiveness is actually completely counterproductive to your physical physique goals as well. And so that's why balance is so important. It's not only going to optimize your mental health, but it's going to optimize your physical health as well. You know, you're going to have to do less work, you're going to have to exude less effort for the same results, you know, because your mind's going to be more at peace, which is going to optimize your hormones, which is going to facilitate a formidable physique, you know? So yeah, that's why I'm really passionate about, you know, optimizing this balance, because the bodybuilding world is in desperate need of it for sure.
I couldn't agree more. So I want to close with a couple things in terms of like your wants and what you're aiming for. So what, and first I was going to ask you, what brought you to Thailand, and have you noticed that you have had to alter your diet a lot? Obviously the foods there are probably a lot different than over here. Has that been easy or hard for you, and how is that going for you?
Yeah. So originally my friend AJ Mirzad, he convinced me to come over to Thailand. He's a friend of Tony Huge, and I knew him from a business event several years ago back in New York that I was speaking at. It was Brandon Carter's business event. And so I had recently done a podcast with him, and then he talked to me about coming over to Thailand. And so I had always wanted to try it, but I was a little intimidated to go to an Eastern country that's so different and attempt to navigate my way around without knowing anyone. And so I just jumped on the opportunity. I planned to just do a 2-week vacation and then come back. But, you know, I loved it so much and I didn't want to make the 25-hour flight back. So I was like, you know, I might as well stay. There's really no downsides to living over here besides being away from my family. Right. You know, it's cheaper. The people seem to be nicer. They seem to have a less adversarial approach towards reality itself.
Yeah. You
know, they're less offended about things. They're more peaceful. It's called the land of the smiles. They're not so quick to blame their unhappiness on the rest of the world and other people. And I just like the mindset of people better over here. And so it's much more pleasurable to interact with people. And yeah, I have a lot of fun over here. They're it's still fairly technologically advanced. I have good internet. I have everything I need. I can go to the store and really get anything that I need. They have their own version of Amazon here. You can ship goods to your condo. And so, yeah, there's not really any downsides of living here. So it's been great. The food is different, although I've always been a fan of Asian food. In fact, in the States, I would religiously go to a Chinese buffet twice a week, you know? And so that's an amazing ritual. You know, you take some MK677, get a little hungry. And then I like to fast. I like to fast all day. I like to take MK677 in the morning and really feel that hunger all day. And then, you know, eat one big meal out of the day at the buffet. And so, you know, there's obviously no shortages of those in Thailand. And so, yeah, it's great. The food is different. And in the Thailand culture, it is more normalized to go and eat out at a restaurant or a market because the food at restaurants and markets are actually cheaper than the grocery store, which is the opposite of that in the US, wow. Right? Because you have so many different street vendors. That's their job, right? So many more people are in the street vending industry. There's just a huge supply, right? And so, yeah, if I was the noble natty that I once was and was obsessive compulsive about my diet, I would hate it here. You know what I mean? Because it would be a lot more inconvenient to have to go to the grocery store here and prepare all my food and miss out on the Thailand culture where we eat at the markets all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And so because of the Natty Plus lifestyle, I'm able to have that balance. I don't have to be as concerned with my diet. I don't track my calories. I still eat relatively healthy. You know, I don't really eat dessert at all. If I do, it's just a cheat meal maybe once a week. So I still try to eat relatively healthy, but I don't track my calories. I enjoy the copious amounts of market food here and really enjoy it. And it's been great.
That's awesome. I kept laughing at the Chinese buffet because I can't tell you how many stoned days that I had at a fucking Chinese buffets here when I was younger, man. It was just, and they're great. I totally agree. I wanted to ask you what are your aspirations on your physique moving forward and how are the gyms there and your training facilities and everything and kind of how do you train? What's your cardio like? Cause like I was telling you, I'm a big cardio guy. I either run 10 miles 5 days a week or I do the elliptical for 15 miles. And then I end up doing about 2 hours of cardio per 5 days a week. And then I train another hour and 15, 20 minutes lifting because I've been going really hard in there. So I spend a lot of time training. What do you tend to put your body through in terms of everything that you do?
Yeah, that's cool how you're that into cardio. Obviously, cardio is very advantageous for your health. I probably should be doing more. I try to stay active. I do a little bit of jump rope. I try to do a little bit of jump rope every day just to make sure I get in some cardio. And then I try to walk different places when I
yeah.
can. And I try to remain relatively active. I golf and do different physical activities. But in terms of my weightlifting routine, it's actually been compacted quite a bit into just maybe 30 minutes per day. Right. Sometimes I'm at the gym longer because I'm working on my phone, responding to messages and whatnot. But if I just focus on my workout, I'm in and out of the gym in 30 minutes. And so again, I've been trying to optimize the balance in my life. So I want to be as efficient as possible in all areas of my fitness life because I mean, I don't like working out. There was a point where maybe I did like working out. You know, I was experiencing all the newbie gains, but now I work out out of sheer discipline, right? It's not really like I enjoy going to the gym. I would say I suffer a little less if I'm doing a cool supplement experiment, you know, that's in the back of my mind and that elicits some amount of motivation, I suppose. But I don't like going to the gym. And so I try to make my workouts as efficient as possible. So I do these, this exercise or this exercise technique called reps that matter, or it's similar to something like a rest pause where I do your typical set of 8 reps. And then I just take a 10-second break and then do 3 more reps,
yeah.
Take a 10-second break and do 3 more reps. And the philosophy behind it is that the majority of the hypertrophy that you're going to accumulate happens in the last few reps of the exercise. The initial reps are really just to get to that point that you're near failure, where you're causing the most amount of hypertrophy. And so you rest that 10 seconds and then do 3 more reps. And those reps are extremely hard. They're near failure. And so they're more efficient than just doing another typical set. And so that's kind of the philosophy behind it. And it makes my workouts far more efficient. I can get in and out very quickly with the same amount of, I would say, total hypertrophy induced, right? Total like good volume.
Yeah. You know?
Volume. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's my workout routine right now. It's still a typical bodybuilding style workout, you know, 8 to 12 reps on the initial set, the typical exercises you would see a bodybuilder do. But I just try and do it really efficiently and get out of in and out of the gym in 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's good. And I like that. Some of the times when I'm in there longer, it's because I'm like the heavier lifts, I need a longer break. But I'm a big fan of supersetting and trying like 20 to 30 second rests and moving forward. And people don't understand that's called muscular endurance, because you need that. That's why it's important to do cardio, because it builds in different facets of everything that you do. And you know, I always get, well, why do you do so much cardio? And you know, my answer is because I fucking enjoy it, you know, and most people don't. And so that's kind of why I do it. I'm a runner. But in terms of like health overall, I think everybody should be doing it, you know, I'd say 4 to 5 times a week, but at least 3 to 4, I would think, for your basic overall health. People have this misconception, and I'm curious, I want to ask you this before I close. How do you feel about that in terms of it ruining your gains or inhibiting muscle growth, which is what a lot of people will say? And I guess I could see that if you were a marathon runner that never ate or never supplemented or didn't lift, I can see it. But I mean, I've been able to put on cycles, especially, I mean, right now I'm about 180, but I've been up to 205 with the same amount of cardio and just gain, which totally disproves that ideology, you know, that can occur. But how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that cardio is certainly over demonized in the bodybuilding world. I mean, that idea doesn't come from nowhere. Yeah, if you're a marathon runner, obviously your body is going to adapt to your skill,
right?
To your craft, you know? I mean, from an evolutionary standpoint, obviously that's advantageous, right? But if you're lifting as well, your body wants to adapt to that as well.
Certainly.
That's where there can be that amazing synergy. You know, it's like you do some cardio and you lift weights, and that's when your body adapts and you become lean and big. It's exactly. Like kind of obvious, right? Obviously there's a balance to everything. If you run too much and you know, it's weighted on the side of the cardio rather than the weightlifting, then your body is going to reflect that and it's going to be lean and skinny. But there's a balance to everything. So if people put in enough time in the weight room and then also do a little bit of cardio, I mean, that's what's really going to optimize their physique. I think especially being just healthy overall, you know, having a good heart and having that endurance, that can help you in the gym as well. And so there's an optimal level of cardio, but it's probably more than what most bodybuilders are doing.
Absolutely. You know,
less than marathon runners, but more than what most bodybuilders are doing.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on here. I found this to be not only fun, but very enlightening. It was really good to let everybody get to know you. And that's one of the things I love about podcasts, and why I started podcasting was so people could actually get to know me and the people I have on, as opposed to this fucking robot that just does videos, or this character that does videos, or, you know, whatever the case. Yeah. So I appreciate you opening up and giving me the time and the listeners time. And I hope we can do it again, because this was a blast for me. I truly enjoyed it. And if you would kind of tell people where they can follow you, or different sites to find you on, where you're doing all of your work, so that they know. And I'll also put this in the description for everybody in the video to click on and follow.
Yeah. So the YouTube channels I'm prioritizing right now, or the social media channels, are called Natty Plus Protocol. That's where I talk about the supplementation. And so that's where I'm putting most of my time and energy. So if you type in Natty Plus Protocol on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, that's where you'll find me. And that's where you'll hear me discuss the supplements and the natty or not dichotomy and whatnot. So yeah.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, like I said, it was an absolute pleasure to have you here. It was fun. It was very informational. And so I'm certain that people are going to absolutely love this. All right, everybody. Well, another episode wrapped up. This is a very good one. I would highly, highly recommend you watching this. That being said, stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Connor Murphy signing off.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Peace.